Ben Campbell, you're married, you have a family, and you're an actor. How different is your life from your friends who are insurance clerks?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have any insurance clerk friends, pretty well all my friends are actors. I mean, that's basically who everybody I know is actors. My parents were actors, my grandparents were actors, so I was sort of in a theatrical world all my life, so I really haven't. I suppose I know people on golf courses who do other things, or bankers and things like that. And then, you know, I socialize with other people, but I don't, I pretty well run the world of actors.
I did an interview one time with Goldie Semple, and she said she knew all the girls her daughter's age because she wanted them to see a more normal life than parents wandering around the living room talking to themselves.
Well, I guess that's true. I don't think my children have picked up any wild eccentricities from seeing me yabbering about and talking in the living room or anything like that.
I didn't realize you came from a family of actors in Canada or somewhere else.
Yeah, my father and mother were both British actors. My mother was a British film and theater actress. And my father started off with Tyrone Guthrie, who was at the Old Vic. And Tyrone Guthrie came over to start the Stratford Festival, was invited to take, you know, to send it on its inaugural voyage. And Dad came over with him and did the first, I think he did the first season and then went back to England. And when he got back to England, he said to my mum, let's move to Canada. So they emigrated to Canada, and my brothers and sister, and then I have a half-brother and a half-sister, were born in England, and I was the only one born in Canada. And then Dad was at Stratford for years. Then he took over the Guthrie Theatre in Minneapolis. He was the artistic director there. And then we moved to Chicago. By that time, my brothers and sister had left home, and so I was living with them in Chicago. Then we moved back to England, and I trained in England, and then I came back to Canada.
So you had no alternative in a career for your life.
I mean, I had all sorts of other things planned, you know, airline pilot, architect, you know, all sort of slightly romantic things of changing, or, you know, either being daring and adventurous or changing the world by art or something. And Dad always just, once I had decided to go into the theater, Dad said, oh, those were all just parts you were playing anyway. Which I look back on it, I think, yeah, they sort of were. I didn't have the sort of discipline for the mathematics required, really. I was fairly good at math, but I didn't have the discipline for it. And then I realized, of course, thinking I would be able to go in the theater with no discipline at all, and it requires a tremendous amount of discipline.
Did it make a difference that you would come home and your father would say, well, you weren't very good tonight?
Yeah, there were a couple times that he came to see things and he was very offhand about things, which was sort of his personality, which was always a little soul-destroying, I would say, but because I looked up to him a great deal. But he came to see me do something here at Shaw, which he was very offhand about one time. And I really lost my cool with him, and he never did it again. So that was the end of sort of, I guess it was me sort of being my own man. It took a long time to do it, but I guess I became sort of my own man when I came to the Shaw Festival, really.
You've worked at Stratford and here. Are they different?
The spirit of being in the theater is not any different. And the motivations of the people running both organizations aren't any different. I think Stratford is a larger institution, and I think there has been probably through board pressures and things, there has always been a larger sense that the theater has some kind of relation to the Chamber of Commerce. And the people on the board have always been insistent that the festival do certain things to draw people to the town, that it was the sort of main, you know, factory job of the town. And so I think it has lent, and because it's size, they've had to go into a more commercial vein, I think. And because, again, of its size, there's a much stronger hierarchy and star structure and all that sort of stuff, which has its pluses and its negatives, and vice versa. Here, we don't have a star system, and that has its pluses and negatives as well. I mean, I think from an audience point of view, they would probably prefer to see every once in a while a Christopher Plummer come through here or something like that. But it's that's not the way it's been. It wasn't under Christopher's tenure, and I don't think it'll go that way in Jackie's tenure either.
One difference, of course, for an actor is the theaters are different size. I mean, we're in the Festival Theater, which holds, what, 750 or something like that, and the Festival Theater in Stratford was cut back a few years ago from 2,100 to 1,800. It's a big room.
Yeah. The festival in Stratford is interesting for its, particularly since the dimensions were brought in, which I think ended up being a pretty good idea. Not simply because of not being able to fill the seats, but 220 degrees was a huge angle to cover. And Guthrie had only insisted on that, from my understanding, Guthrie had only insisted on that because of just to get more bums in the seats, basically. And once they realized that was not the same kind of pressure as it was, in fact, it's become the opposite. We're desperately trying to get people into the theater. They brought the walls in and made it. It was going to be absolutely flat, 180 degrees. But my father said it can't be as symmetrical as that. So I think it's actually 178 degrees. It's pretty close, or 172 or something like that.
In terms of just doing your lines, it's a big room to deal with as opposed to the Festival Theater here.
Yeah, it is a big room, but the acoustics are extremely good. I mean, I think in every theater there's always an acoustical problem underneath the balcony. I mean, the acoustics in the Festival Theater here at Shaw are extremely good too, but I understand for people who have tonal problems, you know, picking up, you know, as you get older, you start to lose. If someone has too bassy a voice or too high a voice or any kind of mushy diction or anything like that, they find it very difficult under the balcony to pick it up in the same way that if you're in the balcony or if you're in front of the balcony, there isn't a problem. I mean, I've never found myself going to see anything here. I've never had any difficulty ever hearing anybody, even the people who I don't find projected a great deal. And sometimes you can over project. You know, I find that sometimes there's in all theaters, people tend to, in large theaters, actors have a tendency to sort of feel they really have to bump it up some kind of notch. And you don't really, if your voice is, it's more articulation than it is volume.
If you go to theater across the border, for example, from theaters in Buffalo to theaters here, there is the impression that American actors are trained more to be mic'd and wired and to make sure they can be heard, and the Canadian actors, I suppose British actors too, are trained to get their lines out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't know how it works in the United States. I mean, I think that is beginning to happen here more too, that people are, because of the advent of microphones in musicals, people have started to think, well, we can make it sound almost natural. Why don't we start bumping people up in the theater? And I'm sort of, you know, very old school about that. I don't think it's necessary for a start. And I think it gives a false impression. The reason you're going to see something live is to have the sort of exchange between two people. And there's that strange, inexplicable thing that nobody really can, you know, nail down, of the electricity that passes between one human being in another. And I think once you put the microphone into it, it has a sort of tinier quality, and it separates the audience from the actors. I don't know why that is, but it certainly does when I go. If somebody's mic'd, you feel that they're in a different world than you are.
Well, the sound sometimes seems to come from odd corners wherever the speakers are.
Yeah, that's right. Or, yes, that you see someone, particularly with the kind of miking they do now, you do generally hear the person's voice over the microphone, but as you say, the minute they go off into a corner of the stage and turn up stage, then the voice you only hear coming from the speakers. And I think that's really discombobulating for me.
You have two interesting roles this year, your father in Ragtime, which sort of means you come on at the beginning and return at the end, and your Walter Burns in His Girl Friday, where you're basically on stage the whole time. But as Walter Burns, it's a very energetic role. You're moving around the stage. And is this a director's decision, or just because you seem to be a very active performer?
I would say it's probably that I'm an active performer, though sometimes I don't know if that's a curse or a blessing. I mean, I think it's I think it's good that I've got lots of energy, but I think there's sometimes a lot of directors who just try to sort of calm me down. And as I've grown older, I've started to recognize the parts that don't require as much work. But something like, you know, a couple of the musicals that I've been in here and a play like this, like His Girl Friday, require, in my opinion, an enormous amount of energy. And if they're not performed at that kind of pitch, they just fall a little flat. And that was assisted by Jimmy Mizon, who's the director of the piece, who, you know, has had a lot of experience in this kind of, this style of play. And I think he did apply the pressure to keep the pace going, keep the thing moving, that it had to be filled with energy, because it's not a play of any great profound depth. I mean, there are things in it that are profound, as there is in anything, but it really requires an acceleration through it all the time. And I mean, the problem with it is sometimes you can come on gangbusters a little too early, and then you have to sort of pull it back in the middle so that you've got, you know, a big push for the final furlong of the race, in a way.
When you get cast for a season, for example, the two roles here, are they often shows you don't know, or shows that you run out and grab a script and say, who is Father in Ragtime?
In that case, yes, I did have to rush out and get the script. And I think before I'd actually read it, I had talked to Jackie and Paul. Paul is the musical director and Jackie the artistic director, obviously. And they had given me a sort of rundown of what the play was about and what the part was like and what songs I would be singing. So I had sort of, you know, bought into the whole thing before I'd actually read the script. I mean, I would like to say that all the actors in the company have some decision-making in reading a script and saying, yes, I think I'll do that one and I won't do that one. But basically they say, here's what's going. And it's sort of like, it's not take it or leave it, but it's, we don't have as big a say in things as I think we would like to do. As very much, I'm sure, as you, when you're a print reporter, you know, you go out and you do that job. That's the thing you're assigned to that day.
When you get a role like Father and you read it, he's not the nicest guy in the world. I mean, it's 100 years ago and all of that, but he's a pretty unpleasant guy.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, this is where it comes into sort of text issues, and does the text support what you're actually trying to achieve as the actor? I personally don't feel that he is such a ghastly guy. I think he's a product of his time, and I think it is... It's not a failing in the script, because that makes it sound as if the script is a failure, and it's not. It's extremely successful, I think. But in the terms of the detail of the, for me, of the character of Father, I think there's not enough tying between why he says certain things. I mean, that he uses the N-word, which is a completely, you know, it's not allowed to be spoken anymore, and rightly so. And, he uses it, but he uses it more, I think, in a way that is that he likes saying Polak or Mick or something. He doesn't think of it as a derogatory term. He thinks of it as a descriptive term. And that, in his case, he speaks about black people and their pride. He has no other way of saying black pride, so he uses what he considers a sort of vulgar way of living. Because he's a very repressed guy, I think. And I think it is a slight... It's a difficulty in playing the part that the writers use him a bit to flick back and forth between being a villainous sort of person and being a man who has a heart as well. So it's a complicated thing to play and to feel that you're truthful about. And certain audiences definitely interpret him as an evil person more than others do.
Do you do any research on the period?
Yeah, I do. Not always. I mean, certainly I didn't do much research prior to Ragtime, because it was a period I sort of knew a lot about, either because of previous shows that I had done, or when I was living in the United States, when I was a teenager, I was very interested in the civil rights movement and have continued to be interested in that and the idea of slavery and all that sort of thing. So I've done a lot of research into that area. So it's something I was quite familiar with doing Ragtime, the conflict between black and white and Asian and immigrant and all that. I didn't sit down and sort of reread all the books that I have read in the past or anything.
How about His Girl Friday?
His Girl Friday is more a stylistic piece, so that it's not, you know, I mean, the research that we did was more the stuff I think Jimmy did most of the research, and it was stuff we discussed about, and would we use this kind of lighter, or would, you know, I didn't do a great detailed research on that. It's more, the only time I do a lot of detailed research is when it's a more naturalistic piece, and you need to sit really in the time. Whereas these are two big pieces. Ragtime is is governed by its music, obviously, and it's scored all the way through. And His Girl Friday is a stylistic piece. So it's more, I guess if I did any research, I looked at a few black and white movies and sort of screwball comedies and stuff. But I didn't do too much of it because I think all of us have absorbed all that stuff anyway. I mean, through years of sort of sitting late night television, you suck it all up, or you've seen other shows. So then you bring your own sort of, your own version of that to it. And if you do too much of the research, particularly in viewing another theatrical production or a film of it, I think you tend to be imitative as opposed to original and going with who the group of people you are and reacting off that and what the director has done. And Jimmy has an incredible amount of energy himself, and he really, you know, it was a really fun rehearsal period. We worked really, really hard and fast, and it was good.
If you do a Shaw play that hasn't been done here in 10 or 15 years, as opposed to some Shakespeare plays at Stratford where it gets done, whether you're in Romeo and Juliet again next season, are you locked into perceptions of a play and perceptions of a part because you've been on stage with it so often, even if you're playing a different part than you're doing?
No, I don't think so, because it's always a new group of people. It's always a different director who has a different point of view about the thing. And you also sort of learnt things along the way that have given you a different temperament that you bring to something. I mean, I think if I were to go back and play all the parts that I played at Stratford again, I would do them in an extremely different way, or I would have different, I would reflect on certain things a little more than I did then, probably.
Thank you, Ben Campbell.
Thank you very much.